All right, we are joined in the media center by Jack Beckman, who ran a 3.911 at 332.18 miles per hour to close out Q2 in his Infinite Hero Foundation Dodge Charger. I mean, were these conditions pretty much as optimal as your team had planned for and hoped for?
I actually don't understand why it wasn't quicker. When we rolled around there for Q1, and low ET before we ran was, I think, a 396, I thought, well, everybody must just be missing it, and then we went a 395, but I don't know if that was a reflex action to slowing our car down, watching a lot of them spin out there. I truly thought somebody was going to run in the 80s on session one, and nobody's done it all day Friday. And Gainesville's typically just crazy good conditions. It's sea level. It's not hot out. It's a good racetrack. So I'm frankly surprised that funny cars didn't run quicker today.
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you even have to raise your hand, to be honest. Yeah. Let's just shotgun
I'm
this.
Just used to it.
Yeah.
What do you think some of that might have been? The fact that cars in front of you and even yours not necessarily going as quick as possible you possibly could out there?
You know, I think as a driver, a lot of times you can know too much. There's some data that's just, wait for it, superfluous. Look that up, Jay. That just, it's not going to help you drive the car. John Medlin and I always get on the radio when we're a couple pairs back from running, and he'll tell me, this lane's going to move you this way, or it's got a bump here, or it's got a... So I get my head wrapped around what I need to do. But I think to answer your question, the crew chiefs always race the racetrack. So when you look at the numbers out there, obviously that's all the track conditions we're going to give us. I don't think that's all the weather conditions we're going to give us. Because if you look at Pro Stock, where they're 213 miles an hour, that's I think the best ever for the EFI program there. So we know the weather's good. I guess we were just tiptoeing to make sure we didn't overpower the racetrack.
Now, did that have something to do with the fact that cars in front of you kind of stumbled on the racetrack?
No. I mean, that's a legitimate question. But like, even if our teammates went out there and smoked the tires in front of us, I think every crew chief has to think that they're the smartest person out there. And I don't mean that in an egocentric way. What I mean is I think you have to feel like I went out and walked the racetrack. I felt different areas of it. I used our grip meter or used a temperature gun. And at the end of all that, I intuited what I thought that racetrack would hold. And if that guy in front of us missed it, how do I know if he missed it with the tune-up or their clutch didn't wear? So to be so reflexive, I think you can get yourself out of your element. Now, if five cars in a row go out there and spin the tires at 300 feet, you have to address that at some point. You walk out and make sure that's not an issue. So I think that if you look at the cars that ran quick, were all, well, the top three all ran 391, right? And that's three completely different approaches to tune in a race car, three brilliant crew chiefs. So that's probably all the track was ready to give us on Friday.
Now, with you qualifying number one, does that change how you approach tomorrow's qualifying session?
Sometimes I think we drivers answer questions that we probably shouldn't answer, you know, with conjecture. I think it gives us the luxury of swinging harder, but that would only be if the conditions were really good and you say, let's see what this racetrack will really handle. I think that still the crew chiefs are going to go out and look at the track and say, hey, is this track going to handle a 388 or is this track going to handle a 392? I think we're racing for points tomorrow. I think that those bonus points in qualifying are that important right now that we want to be one of the two quickest cars. But we do have a huge advantage. We run last, little asterisk. It's an advantage, except during certain times of the day, the track gets worse the later you go. I want to, are you listening? You're writing this down?
Yeah.
My proposal to NHRA is, after Q1, which is the run order based on current points coming in, when you go to Q2, then Q3, then Q4, let the top qualifiers, just like eliminations, pick where they want to run. I think that would be a pretty cool deal. But we'd play the hand that's dealt to us. We'll be the last car to run. I think that is nothing but an advantage to us. We'll see a lot of data. And tomorrow, dragsters run in front of us. So they'll fill in that bald spot at the launch pad. So, and there's simply more cars going down the track, which never makes it worse unless you're in the middle of summer. So I think everything points to, as long as we don't have intense sunshine, people being able to lean on a little bit harder tomorrow. And I do want to say something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jay Redmond, United States Navy SEAL, combat injured, multi-decorated television star. But Jay is, I mean, honest to God, Jay is the face of what we're doing with Infinite Hero. The whole program with Infinite Hero is we go out there and we do things to raise funds. That's what our whole race team's done. We're almost at $500,000, right? Almost at $500,000 so far with that race car. And that doesn't count the awareness. Then that money goes to our grant committee that's all volunteers, and we pick the programs that we think have the biggest chance of changing veterans' lives. Name of your program?
Overcome Academy.
Overcome Academy. So what Jay's doing is bringing people in for a, well, it's brand new. This is an intensive deal to teach leadership skills to our injured veterans and get them out in the community, not just as functioning members, but as excellent members. And it's multi-layered the way he's doing it. The way he's explaining it to me, I got goosebumps because it's changing lives and it's doing it in such a smart way. And Infinite Hero issued one of our grants to them to do great things with it. Now, what will happen is he's going to prove that this program is even better than we thought it was, and then you get back around and get another grant cycle, and we just keep improving people's lives. And I love that. I love that you take a guy that never gave up, multiple injuries, I guess Navy SEALs just never give up, never, wrote a book, does motivational speaking tours, and said that's not enough. I want to get these vets into leadership roles in their societies, and it's really cool to be a part of that. And let me tell you something. You're in that car, you're strapped in, you're sweating, you're nervous, and you roll up, and you either see Jay sitting up there giving you the thumb. He leans in and gives me the thumbs up there. Or a lot of times I'm rolling up for the burnout, Gary Linfoot sitting in his wheelchair there. He's the one pictured standing with an exosuit on the back door of our trailer. And I'm thinking, God, if I ever was going to feel sorry for myself or nervous, look at what these guys did with huge odds against them. And it makes me feel... proud of our country, proud of these guys, and incredibly lucky to get to do what I do for a living.
Perfect.
You have three questions, so go ahead and start thinking of them, okay? Yeah. Well, then you don't get to leave until Top Fuel comes up.
Yeah, we have one of the graduates will be here tomorrow, Sean Lopez. So Allie
is, and we should do more on this because this is exactly what defines what we do. This is exactly what we do. Allie J.
Yeah,
Allie.
Nice to meet you. I've heard about all about you.